This weekend at the Carpenter Theater at the Dominion Energy Center, it's Virginia Opera performing Benjamin Britten's A Midsummer Night's Dream. They've been performing this for several weeks, and Richmond is the last stop. Adam Turner is the principal conductor and artistic advisor, our good friend who is back with us today. Hello, Adam.
Hello. Great to be back.
And Matthew Burns, who has been with us before, and he is performing as Bottom. Matthew, good to have you aboard.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And you are from Richmond, I should mention, right off the bat.
That's true. I grew up in Verina, in the east end of Richmond. I went to Verina High School, graduated a long time ago, and then went to VCU and became a Bachelor of Music from VCU. 20 years later, I was brought on as an adjunct voice faculty, so back at my alma mater. So it was lovely to come back to Richmond.
And you've been on the traditional concert stage as well, and you're pretty happy with that. So what's the difference between singing, let's say, with an orchestra or in recital versus an opera?
Oh, it's a great question. The preparation is very different. When you're singing in an opera, the plan is to hide behind a costume, hide behind a character, and your voice speaks on behalf of the character. When you're on an orchestra stage performing, say, The Messiah, which I've done here with the Richmond Right. Symphony a few times, or in a recital, it's just you standing up there in a tux, and there's nothing to hide behind. So it's just the voice, it's just the music, and it's a fascinating and thrilling experience. But I prefer opera, I would say.
Adam, what made you choose Britten's A Midsummer Night's Dream for this season?
Well, we're always looking for something that fits in the season that introduces our audiences to new repertory. You know, in our 43-year history, we had only done one other Britten opera, The Turn of the Screw, which is more of a dark subject matter. A Midsummer Night's Dream is a fantastic comedy. It's very accessible music. It's from 1960 by Benjamin Britten, of course. And we just noticed this hole in our inner repertory and thought, this is something our audiences will really love. And so far, knock on wood, they really have. The general response has been overwhelmingly positive.
Well, I think, you know, most people think of Felix Mendelssohn when they think of A Midsummer Night's Dream. So tell us a little bit about the differences in the music. I mean, it's a totally different era.
Sure. Yeah. 1960 as opposed to the 19th century. So, you know, for me, what's most fascinating about this specific composer's realization of a Shakespearean play is that it truly is one of the only word-for-word liftings of a Shakespearean play. You know, you have lots of composers like Verdi, Gounod, Thomas, Mendelssohn, all these other composers that are not English and are not using English words in their settings. And Britten literally took the play, whittled it down to under 3 hours, and, you know, cut it in half with his partner Peter Peers, and created this play. But there are only 7 words that are not original to the Shakespeare in this entire opera. And I think that's pretty incredible. It's one of the only operas, adaptations, you'll say, of an opera that uses all of Shakespeare's text.
And you've got a lot of characters in this opera.
Too many.
That's true.
And, of course, music is always tailored to the character, but I think maybe more so in Britten's opera.
Well, and what's fascinating, you always ask me about the plots. I'm not going to give away the plot.
That's
for
okay.
This, because there's no way.
Please, folks, read
a synopsis before you come, or show up a little early and read it in the program book. But it's a Shakespearean comedy. It's hilarious. Just know that when you mess with nature, nature messes back. And I think that's the gist of the story. Puck, Robin Goodfellow, is not such a good fellow, and he is a meddler in all of these lives, in these stories of love and marital infidelity and whatever. There is a moment in the opera, because I want to get to an excerpt of Matt. There's a moment where this rustic to my left, Matt Burns, who plays the role of Bottom the Weaver, has been turned into a donkey, and Queen of the Fairies, Titania, falls in love with him. So this next aria that we're about to hear, an excerpt from Bottom's Dream, is Matt awakening and realizing what the heck just happened.
Me thought I was. There is no man can say what. Me thought I was. And me thought I had. But man is but an ass if he can offer to say what me thought I had. The eye of man hath not heard. the ear of man hath not seen. Man's hand is not able to taste, his tongue to conceive, nor his heart to report. What my dream was, what my dream was, my dream. I shall get Peter Quince, the carpenter, to write a ballad of this dream. And it shall be called Bottom's Dream. Bottom's Dream.
All right, so I want to ask Matt a little bit about his character, because I read from Glenn Winter's blog, he says he's the guy who thinks he'd be perfect for all the parts.
That's right. He is an egotistical narcissist who believes that no one can do it as well as him, as well as he. So I think at this point, the rustics gather to put on a play for the Duke at the Duke's wedding as an option for an after-dinner treat for them. So they come up with the subject matter, which is Pyramus and Thisbe, which is a famous Greek play, where a tragedy, very similar to Romeo and Juliet, where each lover discovers that one is dead and then they commit suicide. The first one commits suicide, the other one sees that they've committed suicide. It's pretty much a direct Romeo and Juliet parallel. And when the parts have been distributed, Bottom says, oh, yes, this is going to be a great play. Well, tell me what part I'm doing. Oh, yes, Pyramus. Oh, that's fantastic. I'll do that. And then they offer up the part of Thisbe, which is the lover. And in Shakespearean time, all of the female roles, as we know, were played by men. So Billy Brewley, who is playing the role of Flute, the bellows mender, gets offered the role of Thisbe, the female. He bucks at it, and then Bottom steps up and says, oh, yes, I can also play that role. And then other roles come around, and he says, oh, yes, I'm a great lion. I'd be much better than anyone else. So this ego goes throughout his character, and it's absolutely a joy to play. I draw upon John Lithgow's character from 30 Rock, or Michael Scott from The Office. All of these great characters from pop culture have fed my ability to draw on more ego and more ego. So it's really fun. And then we get to the actual play within a play. After he's gone through the point in the excerpt where we just heard he has been transformed to an ass, back to a normal person, maybe not any better for the wear, gets to the play within a play. Pyramus comes out. They have to speak through a wall because they are star-crossed lovers. They are cursed. They are not allowed to be around each other. The families are feuding. And Bottom is, or Pyramus now, is whispering through the wall and is asking Thisbe to tell him that he is, help me out here, Adam. Yeah. Help me out.
Well, this excerpt is really, truly, it's the funniest thing, because Billy Brewley is singing about, you know, oh, where is my Pyramus? Where is my Pyramus? And I think you'll just get a hint of, this is worth the price of admission. Folks need to stay for Act 3. Just hear this.
Deceiving me is Thisbe's cue. Yonder she comes.
O wall, full often hast thou heard my moans for parting my fair Pyramus and me. My journey lips have often kissed thy stones. With stones and lime and hair dipped up in thee.
I see a voice, now will I to the chief.
So you hear a little bit of the harp and flute there. To me, it's a direct parody of Lucia di Lammermoor. I mean, it's hilarious. And this entire scene, the play within the play of Act 3, is a direct bel canto parody. Britain is able to access all of these other types of voices of composers, Donizetti, Verdi, Bellini, whoever you want to think of. It's truly a hilarious scene, and I hope people stick around for it.
It's a great payoff, actually. You know, the characters get set up over Act 1, Act 2, and the audience thinks, oh, what's going on here? Who am I meeting? Who are all these different characters? Everyone culminates in this moment here. All the lovers are at the play. The Duke and his bride are at the play, and all the rustics have come. And yeah, it's absolutely a payoff, so you must stay to Act 3.
Don't leave. Now, the other thing we wanted to talk about is the world of the fairies. You know, the King of the Fairies is actually played by a countertenor. We haven't had a countertenor singing with the opera company in quite some time. And so we have this British guy, Owen Willits, fantastic performer, who's making his main stage debut with us, singing the role of King Oberon. This is a little excerpt from his aria, I Know a Bank. So you see there, it's such a unique quality of sound, and it really gives this otherworldly feel to the piece. I don't know how it feels to you, Matt. I mean,
it
you
does.
Encounter Oberon at some point too, I think.
I do, but I never actually meet Oberon. I only meet his wife, but but I am on stage sleeping during his arias, and it is absolutely stunning to hear. And he's such a strong presence on stage as well, just really commanding as the Fairy King.
Yeah. Well, and he and his wife, Titania, are having this little fight. This is kind of what motivates the whole play in the very beginning. But they also have all these servants. They're the fairies they rule. And I just wanted to give you a hint of what the chorus in this show is about. We have 13 young women from the Governor's School for the Arts singing the roles of the fairies. And this is a little excerpt from the end of Act 2.
Benjamin Britten's A Midsummer Night's Dream, performed by Virginia Opera this weekend, tonight, 8 o'clock, Sunday afternoon at 2:30 in the Carpenter Theater. Adam Turner and Matthew Burns, thank you so much for stopping by.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Mike.